response.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
97.1 FM Talk. On-demand audio. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
You know, I often talk, Sue Thomas, of my affinity for Sin City, for Las Vegas. I go out there a lot. I visit there because my good friend Rick is out there. And I like seeing shows and comedy, et cetera. I've been to Sphere three times, and there's a rumor going around about somebody who might perform at Sphere that's going to just, I think it's going to get you to want to go to Sphere.
Really?
You just wait on that.
All right.
Okay? I'll bring that up a little bit later this hour. I may or may not be serious about that with you, but you're going to find it interesting. We'll have Dan Reardon join us. You know, the British Open controversy with Bryson is actually really interesting. It's all the talk and the buzz of the golf world. Rory McIlroy kind of weighed in and criticized Bryson. It's just sad for me because I hated him. Everybody hated Bryson when he was younger, right?
Well, yeah.
Because he was an immature jackass. Mm. So then he becomes this very lovable creature on YouTube and on Instagram, and he's playing golf with President Trump and all these things. And then last week, he kind of reverts to jackass form.
Yeah, what's that about?
I don't know, but we'll talk with Dan about that coming up. We have the deputy director of the FBI on the line, Andrew Bailey, our former attorney general here in Missouri, just off of a great successful stint protecting people at World Cup sites across the country. Hello, Andrew Bailey. How are you?
Hey, Mark. Thanks for having me on, my friend.
How much of a relief is it that the last month is over? But, man, you really, you know, you think about the number of games, and you guys have kind of said it was like preparing for like 78 different Super Bowls, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, this was an enormous event of historic proportion, 56 field offices covering 11 host cities. We had to cross-level different assets and resources to make sure we had enough coverage. And look, Major League Baseball is still going on, America 250. State fairs, all those normal events that happen every summer are layered on top of the massive security concern for a World Cup that saw record-setting attendance. So it was a big success, really proud of our partners at the local level, especially across the state in Kansas City, showing the world the very best Missouri has to offer.
Yeah, so what was, you know, obviously the FBI is kind of running point on some of this, but you had to have all this cooperation for so many different law enforcement agencies across the country to pull this thing off and to make sure everyone was on the same page.
Yeah, that's right. And it's not just our local partners in the host cities. It's also foreign partners in both Canada and Mexico. People forget Canada had two host cities, hosted several matches. Mexico had three host cities. And some of the security concerns in Mexico are, you know, really are extreme. And so having that buy-in at that level is critically important. And again, you know, we can't do our jobs at the FBI without those local partners, the brave men and women in uniformed law enforcement. It's sharing intelligence. It's sharing security concerns and ensuring that we're using the legal authorities provided to us to keep the American people safe.
I don't know why I noticed it yesterday during the final, perhaps more than earlier, but when they were showing some of the wider shots of the field and the fans, I mean, there was a police officer that was about every 5 feet away on that field circling the stadium. I mean, I don't think you guys were taking any chances with that crowd yesterday or probably throughout the whole tournament. That was pretty impressive. And I just kind of happened to notice it because I'm like, wow, there's a lot of security, a lot of security.
Yeah, for sure. One, and there's security inside the stadium, there's security outside the stadium, there's security throughout the city to secure the transportation routes into and out of the stadium to ensure that in a mass casualty event that the right resources and assets can deploy in a timely manner. And it's critically important that we have those arteries open, that we have that presence, that you, what you see and also what you don't see.
Yeah, no doubt. Andrew Bailey is here. Our former attorney general is doing great work at the FBI as deputy director. Let me ask you about a story of the day. Do you know anything about what happened in New York City earlier today at the federal building when you had someone who apparently was a former Army member who basically lit off, they say, an incendiary device. It looked like he poured gasoline in front of that building and some fireworks and just set it on fire.
Yeah, that's right. Look, the investigation's ongoing. We're working with New York City Police Department on that investigation. And we're going to ensure that we hold this individual responsible and anyone that worked with him. Look, the president signed NSPM 7. That's a policy memo directing all federal law enforcement to dismantle, disrupt, and ultimately indict criminal enterprises that are left-wing violent extremists. And that appears to be some of the motivation here, right? I mean, the guy was very anti-ICE. And so people that don't like the immigration laws, they need to petition Congress to change them, not try to blow up federal buildings and harm innocent bystanders.
This is something, though, that you're also working very hard on at the office, is trying to make sure that these, you know, because these threats online with the violent extremism, I'm shocked sometimes when I see some of the things that people post on there, and you don't know what's true and what's not true, but you have to take it seriously.
Yeah, Mark, look, there's a scary new threat stream. It's the confluence. It's the merger of radical extremism and modern terrorism. It's called nihilistic violent extremists. They prey on our children. They live on the dark web, but they create victims on the open web. And the Federal Bureau of Investigation has increased the total number of arrests of these NBE groups by 500%. These are the individuals who target isolated children. They exploit those children. They convince those children to commit acts of self-harm, acts of animal abuse, ultimately suicide, and even mass casualty events. And so being adept at operating on both the dark web and the open web to protect victims and hold these violent extremists, these terrorists, accountable is critical. And we're seeing success. All 56 of our field offices now have open investigations into these online NBE groups. And as a parent, I find it abhorrent. It's frightening. These NBE extremists, they find kids on gaming platforms. That's where they're grooming children.
Yeah.
These violent acts.
Because that's where these kids are, really. That is scary. Look, when it comes to all this stuff online, you know, I have a great segment. I know you're a fan of the show. If you're ever around, you know, driving through on Tuesdays at 5:30, my friend George Rosenthal is a great sponsor at ThrottleNet. We do these Tech Talk Tuesday segments. And a lot of it, you know, focuses on AI, but a lot of it also focuses on the sophistication of the malfeasance that's going on out there with these scams. And, you know, even ordinarily smart people, look, I've almost fallen for a couple of the phishing scams. But these things, I'm sure, when they get to the level of your office, are at an unbelievable, you know, level of, you know, confusion and comprehension, and just really, really complicated and dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, there are so many other crimes associated with these online cyber scams, and they cost Americans up to tens of billions of dollars every year in Southeast Asia. They actually have scam center compounds. Where, for instance, in Cambodia and the Philippines and other countries, the criminal enterprises will create these campuses fenced in with buildings and dining facilities and entertainment facilities. And then they'll recruit people from other countries online to then come and work in these scam centers. But then they enslave them. They take their passport. They take their visa. They don't let them leave the compound. And in a single day, they can enrich themselves to the tune of millions of dollars by using AI tools and modern technology to rip off working American families and families in other countries as well. And so we've been hard at work to dismantle those enterprises and hold those wrongdoers accountable, bring them back to the United States to face the full weight of American justice.
So is that, now that it's post-World Cup, just curious about your focus in your particular role as Deputy Director of the FBI. Is that where the focus is right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I was just in Bangkok, Thailand to meet with the Royal Thai Police. They've seized one of these scam compounds. And so we're working through the evidence now and coming up with new innovative strategies. Again, sometimes it's about arrests and indictments. Sometimes it's about disruptions and dismantling these enterprises. But that's what the FBI does. We play a unique role in the criminal justice system, and it's complex international investigations. And we take the enterprise approach. We don't want to just pick off the lower tier criminals. We want to pick off we want to dismantle the entire operation. And so that absolutely is a focus moving forward. And the president came to office with a promise to make America safe again. Sometimes we can do that by taking the fight to the enemy overseas.
Hey, I hope you're getting back here to see the family enough. I know how busy you are, but thanks for checking in with us here on this Monday. And hopefully a little bit of a sigh of relief now that the World Cup is over as well.
Yeah, for sure, Mark. Always appreciate you, man. Hopefully I can come see you in studio one of these days next time I'm back in town.
Do it. We'll start talking a little bit more about Mizzou football. They had SEC Media Days today,
Let's
and Ahmad Hardy has been cleared to practice, so that's big news. Thank you, Andrew. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Mark.
All right,
we'll see
you. I'm going to, tomorrow on the show, I'm going to have Hans von Spakovsky, who is one of the great experts at Heritage And we're going to talk about the SAVE Act. And I want to talk about the SAVE Act right here from a different perspective, because I always look at things and I try to look at things through different lenses. And I'm a proponent of the SAVE Act. I think most people in this country, even Democrats, agree that you should have to show a photo ID to vote and maybe to register to vote. But Lisa Murkowski, who is a Republican senator from Alaska. You know, you have Susan Collins up there in Maine, who is likely, even if Graham Plattner was in that race, likely to still win her seat because she's been up there for a long time. Lisa Murkowski's like one of those Republicans as well. Susan and Lisa vote on the same page, sometimes against Republicans. They represent, you know, states that aren't maybe quite as red as where we live. But Lisa Murkowski wrote something in the Wall Street Journal that caught my attention, and I think there's legitimate complaints in here. Hans, who is a huge proponent of the SAVE Act, is going to respond to this tomorrow. But here's what she said in the Wall Street Journal. She said, President Trump made his case for the SAVE Act on Thursday, claiming the security of our elections is at stake. While I support the bill's core tenets, ensuring that only American citizens vote and requiring identification when voting, I remain opposed to it. Now, I didn't know this until I read this piece in the journal. She says, why? Because it would have serious negative effects in Alaska, and the current text does not allow for the time and resources needed for proper implementation. I'll circle back to that here in her specifics in a second, but one of the big stories that kind of went viral in meme form late last week was the notion that on some of these things related to elections, you have to show an ID to get your unlimited pasta deal at the Olive Garden. So some of us were making that point that right. You have to show, and the Olive Garden was forced to come out with a statement to say, yeah, because the name has to match up with the person who has the never-ending pasta plate or whatever the hell it is. So that's a little different because, you know, we're talking about very few people are going to agree on the photo ID, disagree on that. I mean, it's an overwhelming. I've been talking about voter ID for three decades, believe it or not. It's never been something that's been, you know, proven to me that people can't get. I made this offer. I've talked about this before when I was on KMOX. I begged people in the city who were against this idea. This goes back like 15 years. Bring me one person who can't vote because of this, right?
Yeah.
Now, she puts this into a little bit different perspective because Alaska is not exactly Missouri. So I think that she deserves to have, you know, the complaints heard out. And she says that as written, the Save America Act isn't a simple fix to safeguard elections, as proponents claim. It would impose costly new barriers and prevent some, perhaps many, from voting. And this is where she gets kind of specifics, because she says Alaskans can register to vote online right now. There is no evidence of significant fraud anywhere in that system, yet the bill would effectively end online voter registration by requiring voters to present documentary proof of U.S. citizenship in person to an election official. Now, in my mind, in our contiguous states, that shouldn't be difficult at all.
No.
Right? There's offices everywhere, there's population everywhere, but this is different in Alaska. She says Alaska only has 6 election offices where that requirement could clearly be met, right? 6 places in a state that is more than twice the size of Texas, where roughly 80% of our communities and about 20% of our population are not connected by road. So she even says, and have you been there to Alaska?
I haven't.
Beautiful. I highly recommend it. I recommend it when you're younger, not older. A lot of older people wait to go to Alaska. Don't do that. Sue, you would love it because you're an active person. You can ride your bike.
Ooh.
You can kayak. Ooh. You can do very active things. Becky and I did a helicopter trip to a glacier.
That's
and
fun.
We literally had a guide to our own. It was just us two and this guide kind of, you know.
That's cool.
Oh, it was amazing. So anyway, side note, I digress about Alaska. But what she says makes sense because if you've been up there, you kind of know the terrain and the geography, and it's very, very small populations. And then it takes a while to get to the next place that has a small population. But she talks about Ketchikan and Kodiak. They have Department of Motor Vehicle offices where Alaskans can register to vote. And that's pretty easy for people there, right? But let's say you're an 18-year-old living in Savunga. That is a remote island in the Bering Sea. And if you wanted to register to vote for the first time, if the SAVE Act passes, your only option would be to buy a ticket on Bering Air to Nome, which runs about $780 round trip. A night at the Aurora Inn would be more than $300. So not counting food and local transportation, it would cost more than $1,000 just to register to vote. That doesn't really make sense, right? So she says maybe you're a fisherman on Alaska, out on the Aleutian Islands. The flight to Anchorage, the closest election office, some 800 miles away, would cost you about $1,500 round trip. You would also need hotel, cabs, food while in Anchorage because it would be impossible to fly in, register, and return home the safe day. So she says those examples assume that you have on hand the documents necessary to prove your citizenship. But take one more. You're an 85-year-old native elder born in your parents' house 18 years before statehood. Getting a certified copy of your birth certificate, especially if you never have had one, would be incredibly difficult. And she says that many native people rely on tribal identification to register to vote. But the Save America Act would only require the card to show that the applicant's place of birth was in the U.S., along with a photo and an expiration date. While many tribes' identification cards have a photo, not all have expiration dates, and few include a place of birth. She says only about half of Alaskans have passports. Many have changed, you know, women have changed their names after marrying or divorcing.
Right.
They wait 1 or 2 months to receive certified copies of their vital records. Some of these complaints have been out there, you know, before, not just because of Alaska and the geographical challenges, if you will, but, you know, these have been pointed out by Democrats as well. So she also says beyond registration is voting itself. Alaska is a no-excuse state, meaning that you can vote by mail without providing a reason. More than 50,000 Alaskans did that in the 2024 general election. Voting by mail is an important alternative in Alaska, particularly in small communities that don't have places or poll workers for in-person voting. I mean, I got to say that that sounds reasonable, right? I mean, if you're living in Alaska, especially you get to November where there's, what, maybe 40 minutes of daylight or something like
right.
that. You're probably not going to want to show up in person. It is different. So one of the things that you know, I think a lot of people listening right now would say, okay, that makes sense. But what about offering solutions to that? Well, Lisa Murkowski says that she has done that. She's filed several amendments when it came to the Senate floor. No.
Hey there, it's Jill Schlesinger. I'm launching a brand new show. It's called Money Moves. Follow and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Effort has been made to correct those flaws. She says, I've also asked for the effective date of the legislation to be pushed back to give all states enough time for implementation. As written, the bill would take effect immediately, but it is unreasonable to expect immediate compliance. This bill would force many states to modify their election laws. Some legislatures might need special sessions to do that. I think that's reasonable to have a little bit more time built in, but I'd never really heard these specifics because I'll be honest with you, as someone who supports this, supports the SAVE Act, supports, you know, making sure that we have safe and fair elections, I'll admit that that's a perspective I did not think of.
Right. I had not considered.
And Hawaii probably has similar challenges, right? So is there, and this is what I'll ask Hans tomorrow, is there a way to get Lisa Murkowski on board? I don't know if you have some exemptions, but they can do anything in legislation.
I would think.
Her complaints and why she's voting against it for her particular state, they
make
sense.
Yeah.
They don't sound, look, the Democrats are opposed to it for no reason other than they're just opposed to it. They don't really, they make up things and they say things that really won't happen, just like the Georgia election law. And Larry David created an entire season of Curb Your Enthusiasm about that, and it was based on a false premise that people in line couldn't even get water. It's much more, I don't even want to talk about it. It's so stupid that that thing was manipulated the way that it was. And by the way, they have more voters in Georgia than they've ever had in the past.
Uh-huh.
Dan Reardon's going to join us at the bottom of the hour to talk about Bryson DeChambeau becoming a big baby again. But first, traffic here, and we got another segment. I got some stuff I still want to go over audio-wise. That's coming up next.
Get more at 971talk.com.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on motherhood, wellness, self-love, and more. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.